What do you I'm an investor of yours. So you're I don't forget how much I invested, but you're like, well, I don't really invest in anything other than like total index funds, and but you're like one of the few. I think you're one of three things that I did. It's going great. I mean, I see the returns, but how much do you have in total self-storage now? Like $100 million or something?
I think last time I came on, it was 15 properties or so and $20 million worth of storage. And we now have 61 properties, 1.8 million square feet of storage. We've acquired it for $103 million. We've raised $41 million from people like you who invested in Bolt Storage. So yeah, it's been a whirlwind. The last 2 years have been crazy.
Would you say $100 million worth of, is that, that's how much you paid for it? I don't know how much it's worth.
I don't
Dude,
either.
that's
I mean,
sick.
we could guess. We could try to guess, but look, the real estate market has no mark to market, right? Because like Elon Musk, he can see how many shares of Tesla he has and the value of those shares. I have no idea. I mean, I can make educated guesses, but if we sold our portfolio today, I don't know. 6 months ago, we might be able to sell it for 190 million or so.
Oh, that'd be awesome. We I think the way I met you was, so it's kind of a creepy story. Years ago, I dated this Polish girl, and I remember seeing your picture on Twitter, and this is so weird. Your face reminded me of hers.
That is the
I
best
remember.
compliment. That's the best compliment I can
Are
get.
you Polish?
I'm German. Yeah, Huber. My mom is a Gettelfinger, so yeah, we're very German.
I remember seeing your picture and I was like, oh my gosh, this guy looks Polish almost. And then I was driving cross country and I did a Twitter live or something like that. I forget what I did. And you like commented and I just called you on air. Or no, I called you on your phone. I just put it on speakerphone and we started talking. And that's how we met, I think, right?
Yeah, now we know each other quite well. I think we've punched each other in the face. We've guarded each other and fouled each other in basketball. We have hung out at a couple conferences and we talk several times a week. So I appreciate your friendship, man.
I appreciate you too. And then he told me that he was a decathlete, and I was like, "Yeah, but
How fast do you run?
you're not good." And then I looked up his times. I was like, "Oh, he's better than I was." And then that's why I liked you even more. What was your
I
400
had two
time? I
up.
think you ran 47.
Yeah, I opened 47. There's, splits are crazy because your coach wants to tell you that you're running really fast splits to pump you up. But he told me I ran a 46.7 one time split.
I'd believe that. My fastest opens were only in the 48 and 49s, and my splits were 47. So you're probably a second faster than I was. But and did for those for the like you went hard on Twitter when like COVID started. So there's like we have this text message group. It's me, you, Sean, Austin Reef, Nikita Beer, Sahil Bloom, Greg Eisenberg. I think that's everyone. Did I forget?
Yeah,
I forget.
you were an addition that came on about 6 months or a year after the group started, but
Yeah.
you've added some good great banter to it.
And but the reason the group started was you guys all went hard on Twitter around the same time and you like
We're
started
Thread
sharing each
Boys.
other's stuff, your thread boys. And then I remember you started doing that, but did of that $100 million that you've raised or $80 million that you raised, I forget how much has
40.
come from Twitter? 40. You've raised 40. How much
Yeah,
has come from Twitter?
96% of it has come from Twitter.
No way. Is that real?
Yeah, my entire real estate private equity company was built on the back of Twitter. Yes, we'd built our first self-storage facility. We raised 500 grand. My dad took a mortgage out on our house to do it. He didn't tell me that he did at the time because we were middle class. And I went around to his friends basically, and he helped me raise the money for that first deal. Everybody says, you're not self-made, and that's my not self-made story is that my dad was the first investor in my first storage building. But no, then we ran out of money and we had to buy our second, third, fourth, and fifth properties with our own cash from our storage company, our moving company. So then, fast forward to Twitter, I'm tweeting about deals, I'm tweeting about some of our properties, and people are DMing me asking to get on our investor list. And fast forward to today, we've raised $40 million from 320 people, and we have 2,000 people on our distribution list, and it's changed my entire life.
You don't become the world's most valuable women's sports franchise by accident. Angel City Football Club did it with a little help from HubSpot. When they started, data was housed across multiple systems. HubSpot unified their website, email marketing, and fan experience in one platform. This allowed their small team of three to build an entire website in just 3 days. The results were nearly 350 new signups a week and 300% database growth in just 2 years. Visit HubSpot.com to hear how HubSpot can help you grow better. All right, back to the pod.
What's 40 million divided by 300? What's the average check?
Ben can help us out. Maybe I don't have a calculator on me, but yeah, 50 grand. People start. We have some investors up over $1 million.
That's crazy. I wish I would have done $1 million when I saw like the check size.
Yeah, that deal. That deal that you're in is going to be a really good deal. We refinanced it in a really crappy refi environment, but we're going to build some climate controlled storage on that property. And that was a deal that was really big and was uncomfortable, man. I mean, we bought a $9 million. Yeah, it was a big deal for us. That was our biggest deal so far. It was like hard for us to like get the money together and raise the money for it. $9 million. And then we bought another small property after that, another, you know, portfolio after that, included all in the same one. Our basis is about $15 million. And I got my spreadsheet up here.
Dude, I don't even know what that means. What's basis mean? That's how much you're
cost.
In for?
Yeah, total cost. Total cost.
But you're in for 20% of 15, right? Because you only put, or 25% down?
Yeah, exactly right. So we put about 30% down. We have, you know, $12 million in debt because we refied out some cash. But now it's got $1 million of net operating income and it's a, you know, $20 million plus property, which is great.
That's crazy. Yeah, I remember seeing that check. Well, what do you want to talk about today? I want to talk about all types of stuff. Dude, can you talk about the Shepherd thing that you're doing?
Yeah, so that company is a phenomenal company. And it kind of kicks off our discussion because my goal, real estate's a little bit slow. The company's in a really good spot. I still spend a ton of time saying thumbs up, thumbs down to deals and thinking strategy and working on it. But I have a lot of time. And I also have 30 million impressions a month on Twitter. And you know what that's like when you have a podcast like this and the distribution that you have. But yeah, my goal right now is to build a portfolio of ownership chunks in great small companies. You know, sweaty startups.
And Austin, our friend Austin Reef, who founded Morning Brew, he was supposed to come on today and he had like a last minute board meeting. So Axel Springer, thanks a lot, the owner of Morning Brew. Thanks, guys. But anyway, I was like, Austin, what should we talk about? And you and me and Austin were in a thing in a group chat. And he was like, let's talk about, because he knows that I hate advertising. And I like make fun of him. I used to make fun of him as like an enemy. Now I make fun of him as a friend. And about how much you love.
You make fun of everybody, Sam.
Not really. Do I? I don't know.
It's good. It you just make jokes that are at people's expense and it's hilarious.
And sometimes they're funny. And I was like, Austin, what do you want to talk about? And he's like, let's talk about non-advertising ways to monetize media followings. And you did it. So you did it. I don't know what your net worth would be or what like the value of your percentage of your thing would be. But you've done it to the tune of like $100 million of real estate. That's your non-advertising way of monetizing your audience.
Yeah.
You're also doing it in like a bunch of, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. My equity in that is maybe, you know, 10 to 20 million. Yeah.
And like you operate this successful business. So it's not like it's just because of Twitter, you know, you make smart decisions beyond that, but you are also doing it a few different ways. I'm actually a customer of your other business, which is a Costeg business. I almost used Shepherd, which I don't know if you are a part owner or if you're just an affiliate for, but you're doing it in a bunch of different ways. And I want to talk about the ways that you're monetizing in non-ad ways of your audience.
Yeah. So Shepherd is the ideal story. I mean, it was late 2020, November, December. I wanted to hire somebody in the Philippines. I met Marshall Haas, who owns Support Shepherd, and I was his customer. I made a deposit for them to hire somebody, and my goal was to get somebody on the phone in my self-storage facility that could, you know, press one to make a payment. You're going to go to this person, and they're just going to process the payments for us. Just some extra help doing very simple things. I gave them, actually, they built the job description. They got me three candidates ready to interview. I got on and interviewed them all in the course of an hour, and I was absolutely blown away and hired all three of the people. And I'm like, this company is incredible.
What was the rate per hour?
$5 an hour, $800 a month to get these people to come and work for my service company. And
they're awesome.
Fast forward. Yeah, they were incredible. Fast forward 4 hours, you know, 4 months later, I had 15 of these people working inside of my company. And not only were they doing the simple stuff, but they were answering sales calls. They were guiding the logistics of a customer in one of my facilities looking for a specific unit. They were just able to do exactly what our American reps do, except instead of paying 60 or 70 grand a year, they pay we pay, you know, 10 grand a year. So it was a, right. it was a game changer. Now we have our whole finance departments in Colombia. Shepherd has helped us find those folks in Colombia. So the business blew my mind, and I went to Marshall in 2021, May, and said, hey, I want to be an affiliate of this company. Like, give me a cut of what I can bring in and I'll do some tweeting. At that time, they were doing about 50 grand a month in revenue. Shepherd was.
That's their net. That's the net of payouts to the workers.
No, that's like total revenue. Total revenue for Shepherd.
Okay.
As a company, as that business, the one that like does the headhunting and finds the employees for American companies. So they were doing, you know, 50 placements a month or less, and they were growing fast. It was a good company. And I started tweeting and pissing off the woke mob and recommending support Shepherd for like a 15% cut of revenue that I brought.
Say what those tweets were. They're hilarious.
I would say like, I'm going to weather this recession for one main reason. My employees all work for $5 an hour in the Philippines, and they're absolutely incredible. And then it made me look like a complete idiot, but the woke mob would just blow these threads up, totally blow them up. We're talking to the tune of 3 to 5 million impressions. And so that really accelerated the growth of Shepherd. They were getting a ton of business as it was. They started growing like crazy. Fast forward a year later, and Shepherd had 7x'd. The size of that company had grown by 7x.
And how long? So 1 year?
1 year. And it wasn't just because of me. It wasn't just because of me. It's because they started offering folks in Colombia. They started doing a ton of work. And they had
but,
like 51%.
But you were a part of the puzzle.
A big part of the puzzle to help it grow. So I went to Marshall and I was like, Marshall, this business is way too good. I'm not getting enough money. Like, I want to own part of Support Shepherd. And he's like, no way. Like, that's ridiculous. You're just an influencer. And I was like, well, man, I'm going to go start another company that does exactly this, or I could be a partner of yours. And he was, and he's like, okay, you're right. Like, let's make a deal. And we negotiated and I own 15% of Shepherd. And you fast forward to.
And what's the deal? Like, you have to keep referring a certain amount of customers, and do you still get your payout? Affiliate payout?
No, the affiliate payout was canceled. I got 15% of profits, and he just trusted me that I was going to be motivated to continue to do what I do. And now once a month, I just piss off the woke mob on Twitter. I send some newsletter ads, and I kind of sit on the board and do a little bit of ops things and recommend, but I mostly just drive those guys nuts when it comes to that.
I need you to redeem yourself really quick, because you're like, I'm pissing people off. But the reality is that like, what's the salary? 10 grand a year is what to them?
Yeah. These people, me and one of my reps were talking the other day, and it's like, yeah, I bought a house, Nick. It's incredible. I bought a house in the Philippines. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he's like, yeah, this is my home. It's a 3-bedroom house that I bought. And me and Dan talk all the time that our employees in Colombia and the Philippines are just as wealthy as us. They have the same exact lifestyle as we do. Because yeah, they get on a bus, they commute 2 hours, and they work for like, you know, $2 an hour over there with not the best conditions. And then they get to work for American companies, and it changes their lives. So the reality is that the woke mob has no idea what they're talking about. This is an incredible opportunity for them and for us. And now a lot of people are, you know, making that switch and getting employees over there, which is
so
great.
All right. I interrupted you because I wanted you to redeem yourself. But what were you saying
So you fast forward a year now and another year of promoting and the business growing. And I think 51% of their business is repeat customers who want to come back to get more, help. But it's a multi 7-figure profit business a year. I make 50 grand a month personally from my 15% ownership in Shepherd.
God, that's so funny. Dude, you would not have wanted to go and start a competitor to them, would you? It sounds hard. It sounds like a hard business to operate.
It's really hard. They got 150 employees. I was mostly bluffing. I mean, it's a super hard business to start. They have a ton of really good talent and a ton of like sales reps, and like the way that they do business is really difficult. They got to go and recruit and interview all these people over there and vet them and grade their English and like get all these people, these employees put in front of these business owners. So yeah, it was.
And Marshall's a pretty good entrepreneur. I like Marshall a lot. I mean, he's done like 8 different companies and a few of them have done really well.
Very good entrepreneur.
All right, folks, this is a quick plug for a podcast called I Digress. If you're trying to grow your business but feel like you're drowning in buzzwords and BS, then check out the I Digress podcast. It's hosted by this guy named Troy Sandage. He's helped launch over 35 brands and drive $175 million in revenue. So if you want to get smarter about scaling your business, listen to I Digress wherever you get your podcasts. All right, back to the pod.
So yeah, that's hilarious. I can't believe you worked that out. I mean, I think that's a good deal. I've had a few people. So I there's this guy who did this guy, Diego. What's his website? Is it like Short Z? I think it's like short clips. I'll have to find it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, this dude DM'd me. I think is he Cuban or he's not from America. I forget what he is, but he DMs me and I get these DMs all the time. Where they're like, I'm going to make videos for you. You get those where they're like, I'm like, dude, shut up.
Oh,
like,
I get three a day that people want to write my newsletter for me.
Yeah, it's like stuff like that all the time. And 9 out of 10 of them, they're just like really bad. They're not good at what they do. And this guy just kept DMing me. And I was like, screw it. Fine. Prove it. Like, just make clips for me. Send me 10 of them. Like, I just said something stupid or something like that just to like get them off my back. And he like, before the night was over, he sent me like 10 and they were pretty good. And I was like, all right, well, I don't want to post these. I'm going to make you post it for me. I'm going to give you my Instagram password. Send me a picture of your driver's license, your social security card. And he told me at one point he lived with his girlfriend. I go, send me your girlfriend's driver's license too. And he sends me a picture of all of them. And I go, great. I know a lot about you. I'm going to, you know, we're going to have an issue. If you screw me, here's my password to my Instagram. Make it work. And he does, and he kills it. And I go from like 1,000 followers to like 10,000 followers in a week, and then like up now to 50,000. He kills
it. How much do you pay him?
So get this. So I was like, all right. You're awesome. But here's the deal. You're going to do this for me for free for a long time. And in exchange, I'm going to tell all of my friends about you. And I'm eventually, once you prove it to my friends, I'm going to tweet out that I think you're great. And he said, great. And so within a month of him messaging me, we got him up to like 20 grand a month or something like that. I forget, like a really good wage. And he's like, has this thriving business. And then I tweet him out and we send tons of customers to him. And so I also do the same thing where I take a small percentage of the profits and I'm loving this, but I would rather have the profits rather than equity in the business. But
really,
I think.
You mean like a cut of revenue? You'd have rather have a revenue share than an equity slice? That's the mistake.
Yeah.
Sahil sent me a text yesterday and said, Nick, what's your three biggest regrets in life? And one of them
He asked you that question? What a weird question to ask.
He works on this dumbass content online. Who knows what he's going to tweet about?
Why is he asking you that? Okay, go ahead.
One of them was not going to Marshall a year earlier and getting equity instead of freaking a cut of profits or a cut of revenue.
Yeah, I just don't know if a clip agency is ever going to sell.
Yeah. I love agency businesses.
And I don't want to like give advice to people all the time. Do you know what I mean? I think it's different when you're with Marshall because Marshall is like a very proven entrepreneur who has a couple exits under his belt. But like sometimes when
he doesn't want to listen. Yeah, they don't need or want me to get involved in their operations. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, dude, I don't want to like, I don't want to guide you. I just want to send you customers. And sometimes I prefer transactional is what I mean.
I love leaning into the ops. My business partner is an operational mastermind. And, you know, yeah, I have three other companies that I'm working on launching right now on a very same, very similar trajectory as Support Shepherd.
By the way, Diego's company, it's called Short. It's like a short clip. And then ZY.co, shortz.co. So Short and then ZY.co. I'm giving him a shout out.
You should own 25% of his company.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I will end up regretting that, but I'm happy with the deal.
Yeah.
But what were the other two regrets?
Oh, I don't know. Let me look. I think it was go ahead and get married a little earlier and have kids a little earlier, even though I did it when I was almost 30. And then
you weren't married until you're 30 or first kid?
I got married when I was 27 and I had my first kid at 29. And I kind of, if that was 3 years earlier, I would have been just as happy. But yeah, in general, I told him so many
people I talk to say they wish they would have had their kids earlier, by the way. Mm-hmm. And I'm shocked that people say that.
Are you excited to be a dad at some point? I know you and Sarah have started to talk about it. What do you think about, how do you think that's going to change your life?
I'm pumped. I'm so pumped. I think that, I agree. I wish I would have done it earlier. And I am so pumped. I think it's going to be life-changing. I think I was talking to Sarah about this last night. I was like, so we've achieved a lot of like interesting things at a relatively young age, like professionally, like we're known in our field and like we have some respect amongst some peers financially, like we've achieved some things. Like, and then we were like, parents say like, well, you're never ready. And I was thinking last night, I'm like, dude, I'm totally ready. Like, what else do I need to do? This is like, it feels like the next step. So I'm incredibly ready and I don't really care about this, but I actually think it's going to turbocharge my career. I think that like, it's going to make you feel like amped up. Like before it was, I was earning. So I don't know why I was earning. I was trying to make money for egotistical reasons. And then after that, I was like, now I'm in the place where I make money because I do shit that's fun. And because of my fun hobbies, often the outcome is income. I pick and choose different things. Now I think it's going to feel like I want something for my children. I want to impress them. I want to show them how to work hard. I think that there's going to be like a little bit of that. And it's also going to be like, I don't want to spend all of my time after like 6 p.m. working. And so I have to pick and choose my battles. And I think that's going to actually force focus and the outcome will be better financially. Am I wrong?
I think you are right on the money with your two things. There's two more. Number one is that you are going to get so much more emotionally mature when you have kids. At least for me, I was highs, lows. It just puts stress in relative form when you know you have a human that you have to care for, and the stress level of when that human is sick or when they scream or when they cry or when they hurt themselves or when they suffer, that puts it all in perspective. So you just get like better at dealing with stress. The second thing is like I got more focused and I was able to get more work done when I couldn't travel the world. I couldn't go play golf all the time. I couldn't just get on a plane and go be spontaneous and go spend 2 weeks in Europe. So instead, I would spend really good quality time with my family in my house and then pop to my computer to tinker inside of my business and make my business better. I was just more, I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally makes sense. And I'm pumped. You have three kids now?
Yeah, five, 3 and 9 months.
Yeah, man, I'm pumped for it. And I think I don't care about this, but I think the outcome will be a better career because of children. That's my 100%. Prediction.
I think you're right.
I want to talk about the cost seg business because that thing that seems like it's going even better than Support Shepherd. So I'm a customer. I used it. Mm-hmm. I got it for free though. So but I am a customer and I'm
you
using.
You did a video. So cost seg is we have engineers who go in and they break out the different parts of a commercial property or an income property, a piece of real estate, and then they give you a schedule of which you can depreciate that to the IRS, meaning like
because normally it's what 27 years.
It's normally 27 years straight line depreciation. They take it so that the windows, those only have 5 year life. You know, the landscaping outside that only has a 5 year life. Then you got all these ground improvements that we're going to make, and all these other things that can be accelerated a little faster. So, and then there's something called bonus depreciation. We're going way in the weeds. You don't need to know that. But basically, our engineers come in the building, they draw a picture of the property, they split it out into different values, and they give you document that you can give to the IRS to get way more depreciation and save money year one.
So I haven't gotten my report yet though, but let's just make believe on $1 million property that what's $1 million divided by 27 is what?
Yeah, you're going to get $27,000. Is it much? $27,000 a year. Yeah.
Okay. And depreciation, duh. Mm-hmm.
2.2%, maybe something like that.
And then on, with this, it would be what? Like $200,000 in year one.
Yeah, and on a self-storage facility, is anywhere from 20 to 30% year one depreciation. An industrial property might be 10 to 20%. An RV park might be 60, 70%. It just depends on how much ground improvements you've done, like work to the outside of the property, landscaping, you know, windows, doors. You might.
But then do I pay that tax back if I sell the property before 27 years?
Yeah, it's called recapture. So if you don't plan to hold the property for a while, then you need to keep some money because your basis drops, basically. Your taxable basis drops by the amount that you depreciate. So that gap is called recapture, and you pay that at the recapture rate and stuff like that. So, yeah.
And where's your team doing this?
We have my friend Mitchell Baldridge, who you know, his wife Mel. They are my partners. My business partner Dan is a minority owner as well. I own 45% of RE CostSeg. And I mean, Mitchell had done 100 plus of these before we started this company, and he'd never really thought about, hey, we can find some engineers and do this stuff really well. We created a Twitter account, Ari Kosseg. We got really competitive pricing because instead of me flying somebody to your property in Texas, we did a FaceTime. You FaceTimed with one of our guys and he walked around, took some screenshots. What was that like?
My property manager did it and I was out there with her. And I think she was on her phone. And she said the guy sounded Italian. Are they in Italy or something?
They're like, all over. Yeah, we have some people in Miami. Florida's pretty popular. Colombia, Philippines. We've hired 7 people from Support Shepherd for this company, which is another funny part about it. But yeah, we have 23 employees. Mitchell's wife, Mel, who spent 8 years at KPMG, one of the big consulting firms. She was a management consultant. She's the CEO of the company. And yeah, we're 9 months old and we did $250,000 of revenue last month.
Dude, that's crazy. And I remember Jen, my PM, it took her like 20 or 30 minutes. And so my property's big. It's like 20 acres, but there's like a 4,000 square foot house and then like a barn that has a gym. This is for an Airbnb I have. And she like spent maybe 20 minutes walking around and he was like, what's that thing? And they're like, oh, that's like our water purifying system. And he's like, all right, cool. Let me see that. All right, cool. Show me all the windows.
Yeah, they look at like, okay, what can we depreciate faster? And they're like, show me this, show me that. Yeah.
Yeah, and she was like, we have 2 garage doors here. And he was like, all right, cool. Let me see that garage door. I forget what else it was. But she was just walking around and he like had a checklist. But then also he would see stuff and like ask, like, wait, let me see that water filtration system or like... my property's out in the country. So we have like a well or something. And I think he was like, let me see the well. You're wanting to see all this stuff. And I haven't gotten a report yet. I think we just did it like 10 or 7 days ago.
Yeah.
That's
the business.
And there's one other company in the space that's doing it that I almost went with. It was called Madison Spec.
They'll fly somebody out to your property and they'll charge you twice as much to do a cost seg because they got to get somebody out there. So. It's a win-win scenario.
When I read about this, Mark Jenny, so we have this friend named Mark Jenny who we've talked about in the pod.
He's a badass.
Yeah, he's badass. He has like, I don't know, his portfolio is like mid 8 figures of Airbnbs.
The Barstool guys rented one of his houses for Super Bowl week.
Dude, I saw the Barstool guys are in Arizona, I think, and I saw like the mini putt-putt course in basketball, and I was like, I bet this is Mark's. And then you or someone else told us that it was Mark's. Yeah. And he's inspired me to get into Airbnbs. I was like, Mark, what should I read? And he like sent me some book and and that's where I learned about accelerated depreciation. And I started Googling how to do it. And I only found a couple firms doing it. So I thought this was going to be like a niche business. I didn't think it was going to be like a big business. How big do you think this is going to get?
My prediction, and again, I try not to make predictions because then I just set expectations and end up getting, stressed because of expectations and stress and that stuff. But yeah, I think we'll do $3 to $5 million of revenue over the next 12 months,
I think it'll become
over the next 5 years a $10 to $15 million a year revenue business.
You don't have to set expectations, but I will. But I feel like that is undershooting it. I think it could be potentially bigger. I don't know how big the market is, but I bet you there's just so many other services that you can begin to offer depending on how hard you want to work.
Yeah, we're launching. So that's recosteg.com. We're launching taxcredithunter.com as well to do ERC credits and employee retention credits. Same partnership group, Mitchell and Mel. That's when if you didn't lay off employees during COVID and you own a small business, you can get employee retention tax credits back from the IRS. And you need Mitchell on to really talk about that stuff. I can't guide, but basically, if you didn't fire your employees when COVID hit and you kept them on, the government is offering massive tax credits to your business, and very few entrepreneurs know it. They expire in 2025, and yeah, it's significant. We're talking the guys that we know who are running companies with 150 employees are looking at $100 to $1 million in tax credits, $100,000 to $1 million.
There's a company called Main Street. Main Street.
They do same thing.
I think Sean either invested or knows the guy who founded it, named Doug, and they were an advertiser with The Hustle. They're a good company, but what they did was. How much money did they raise? I think they did the exact same thing you're saying. They probably had like a tech play to it. I don't remember exactly, but they're still around. But I think they raised like $200 or $300 million. I forget the exact number, but like a huge amount. And I think they just recently laid off a ton of people. Not because the business stinks, but I think they just like raised a ton of money and hired a ton of people. I do think that that's proof that if I'm in your position and I'm like, oh, well, you guys have just validated the idea and concept. We're not going to raise money because we don't want to screw up our cap table, but I bet we can do this because we already have a little bit of money. We already have an audience. Maybe we won't grow as fast, but we'll own the whole thing and do it our way. And I think
the audience is the key. I mean, the Ari Kostek Twitter account, which I run and Mitchell runs, it's got over 13,000 followers already.
No shit. What are you tweeting on there to make people follow it?
Just all about Kostek, all about real estate investors, client examples, anonymous client examples about how much money we save clients. It blows people's mind when they realize that real estate investors, you can make, I mean, I'm an example of this, you can make $2-3 million a year from operating companies. And if you're a real estate professional and you buy property each year and you Kostek them and depreciate them, you can have zero tax liability. Zero.
Yeah, but becoming a real estate professional is a pain in the butt. I tried to do it, and I was like, there's no way I can justify, like, basically, if I remember correctly, to become a real estate professional, you have to, I forget exactly.
700 hours you have to spend, you have to be the person who spends the most time in the business. Yeah, there's, you need a good CPA to really, like, log your time and create a rock solid case.
And then you also have to, I think the majority of your income has to come from real estate, if I remember correctly, or you can't. Is there something where, like, where is it like your outside, your all your revenue streams can't add up to be more than your real estate income? Is it something like that? I thought that there was something where, like, you can't make too much money. Well, maybe I'm wrong, but I remember the $700 thing. I was like, there's no way I can qualify. Yeah. I think you can get some. I don't want to talk out of my ass here. I don't remember exactly, but I think if you do 360 hours, you can get some.
In short-term rentals, there's a loophole in it right now. We're doing a ton of Kosteks on people who have short-term rentals because they don't have to be a real estate professional. They just have to spend more time on that rental property than anybody else. And there's some threads that Mitchell Baldridge has. And if you search short-term rental on the Ari Kostek account, you could read the thread. But yeah, there's a loophole around short-term rentals.
Well, that's sick, dude. I think that potentially those businesses can be bigger than like your storage thing. But that's just because that's what I know is like internet businesses. Mm-hmm. But I think that actually could be pretty massive, right?
I think I am very bullish on what could happen. I'm excited. Yeah. And then I'm buying and rebranding a property and casualty insurance company.
What the hell is that?
They provide property insurance. Like if you have a commercial piece of property, a self-storage facility or a multifamily unit, you need to get property insurance on it in case there's a tornado or a fire or somebody slips and falls outside.
Yeah. I mean, I have it at my Airbnb. I think it's expensive. I'm pretty sure I pay $5,000 or $6,000 a year. Does that sound right?
Yeah, that sounds right. We pay over $400,000 or over $350,000 annually to insure our self-storage portfolio. But it's also a pain to work with these insurance companies. Like the brokerages operate like it's 1950. You have to print
stuff
out.
Yeah, dude, I don't have like a login. I think I just have like a PDF that like they sent me. And then they sent me more questions that said like, hey, did you ever fix this handrail or something like that?
Yeah.
And anyway, like it's pretty antiquated. It's
my business
old
partner. We were working with a top 10 firm in the country, brokerage firm. Top 10. This is one of the biggest companies. And my business partner, Dan, had to go into that business and build a system for them to quickly get us quotes on properties and to bind our coverage. We can't pay online. Things move slow as hell. Nobody responds to us. So yeah, we're buying an insurance company in Kansas City. We're rebranding it as Titan Risk. TitanRisk.com is the shout out. And we're going to spin up a property and casualty insurance company on the back of, again, the following.
Your website's down, so you gotta, is it titanrisk.com, you said?
Yeah.
All right, you gotta
it'll
get
be
that
up
soon.
It'll be up by tomorrow, hopefully.
All right, good. I don't know, I think this episode might go live tomorrow, so you gotta get it up by then on Thursday. What did you pay for that?
The guy was doing, we found a guy who had a really good contract base with carriers, because that's the key. Like everybody goes to the same carriers, but you have to have contracts with those really good carriers. We found a guy in Kansas City who had that, and he was, I think he's doing $1-1.5 million of revenue inside of a shop. He's the producer. He has 4 back office. We're going to hire folks through Shepherd and some Americans as well, account admins, and we're going to lean on his shop at the beginning and kind of spin up a secondary brand. So if I come on in 6 months, I'd be able to share a ton because this is in its infancy, but I'm more excited about this business than I am about Ari Kostek and Titan. Tax credit hunter.
Our software is the worst. Have you heard of HubSpot?
See, most CRMs are a cobbled together mess, but HubSpot is easy to adopt and actually looks gorgeous.
I think I love our new CRM.
Our software is the best.
HubSpot, grow better.
I want to ask you about the fourth one, but for the first three, did you put up any capital for any of them?
Yeah, we funded a checking account for Ari Costa. We put 50 grand in there, and then 2 months later, you know, we were making distributions.
That's nothing, right? Nothing. I mean, that's nothing. Yeah. And dude, that's crazy to me.
The great thing about hiring an employee, even if you hire a really good engineer for $100,000, you're only paying them $8,300 a month.
Do you have engineers for these companies?
Yeah, we have civil engineers inside of Ari Costa. So yeah, this stuff's not easy, right? Mel Baldridge is a badass. Like, she's managing 23 people. We're doing a ton of volume of sales, doing all these CAD drawings, breaking down these properties. Marshall's team is really badass. Like, none of these companies are easy by any means.
Who's building the system? So like, and not civil engineers, but I mean like web.
Yeah, we're using Airtable as a CRM. We have a lot of out-of-the-pocket tech, but yeah, we're getting some web work done as well. And I'm starting a web landing page front-end development company as well called webrun.com, but that's with another guy that's going to be spun up in the next month. So yeah, I mean, it's getting fun.
I want to ask you about this last one, and then I want to ask you more questions about all this stuff. I'm going to write my questions down because I don't want to interrupt you. What's this pest thing?
Oh, the pest control business? I have an LP, a good friend of mine, who owns 6 branches of a pest control company, and he needs capital to go buy additional properties. And he's got some capital, but not, you know, $5 or $10 million. And I said properties, I meant additional companies to latch on to his business. But I might do a deal with him where I sit on the board and I advise operationally. I help them hire overseas talent through Support Shepherd and implement them inside the company, and then raise the money from my real estate investors to buy the business. But that's in its infancy as well. I need more time to really talk on that.
So about between 2 and 6 months ago, Sean and I on this pod talked about a few things. I told him, I was like, basically, like, on Instagram, you have like Rihanna and the Kardashians, and then there's like thousands and thousands of more. But the Kardashians and Rihanna are like two prominent examples of people who have built hundreds of millions or billions of dollars worth of net worth via Instagram. On YouTube, we have Mr. Beast. He's like the common, he's the one everyone talks about. And then, you know, there's way more of people who have built, like, there's the lady who started Ipsy. I think it's called the makeup brand. There's just tons of them. On Facebook, you could say that, like, BuzzFeed and, like, a bunch of other people, like, you know, built multi-billion dollar businesses on the backs of Facebook. Now, there hasn't really been one who's done it on Twitter. And Snapchat, same thing. We can think of a few more examples. The reason Twitter, maybe it hasn't worked, is because I think people haven't taken it seriously. And also, there's only like 350 million people on it, as opposed to Instagram. There's like, what, billions. But I think that's changing. And what we haven't seen yet is someone who has built like the equivalent of the Kardashians on Twitter, except instead of selling makeup, I think they're going to be selling B2B or professional, whatever that is considered, you know, B2B services or something where it's like a higher end person, not a young woman buying like $12 makeup. And we haven't seen that yet. And then Sean was like, yeah. And then we have like the guy mafia. So you have people like the strip mall. It's like these anonymous accounts, like the strip mall guy, who I know who he is. I'm friends with him. And he is a large business. And I don't know what has come from Twitter, but he has a large business. And then there's like 5 or 6 other guys. There's like the used car salesperson guy, and he's like potentially going to build a large business. And like, it's very predictable.
Luxury watch guy is selling shitloads of watches on Twitter.
Yeah. I almost bought a Rolex from him. He like had these date justs that I wanted. Mm-hmm. No one has done this to the extent of like hundreds of millions. So I guess you kind of almost have already, but no one has done this to the extent that I think possible. You might be one of the first, or at least one of the people that I know closely, who might be one of these early people to build a multi-hundred million or even a billion-dollar fortune, mostly because of your audience on Twitter. Do you think that's accurate?
I think these companies are so in their infancy, and it's really easy to get to 250 grand of revenue. But ask guys like Andrew Wilkinson how hard it is to go from $250,000 a month to, you know, $250 million a year in revenue. Like, those types of jumps is on another level, right? I don't know if I have what it takes to do things like that.
You're but saying I mean, you don't think you have what it takes? How can you, say that?
I'm going to try. Hell yeah, I'm going to try. But like, I mean, what
how
I'm
much
saying is
harder it's can it be than what you're doing now, but you give it 10 or 15 years to mature?
I don't know. I think what Austin Reef does at Morning Brew, like managing these bigger companies, is just a different skill set. It's different. Like,
but you're not doing it.
But I'd have to become a billionaire, wouldn't I?
I don't know. Because, dude, it's kind of like you're like the Ryan Reynolds of Twitter a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, he's got Mint Mobile. He has the soccer team that he partakes in. He's got the alcohol drink that he has. I think he has a few more. I mean, that guy's not operating those companies. Conor McGregor's not operating the whiskey thing. But like,
yeah, and I can't operate my companies either. I'm focused on my real estate and everything else. Yeah.
And so my point being is, if you have 10 to 20 or 30% of a handful of things, one of them could hit. There's this guy named Felix Dennis. Have you ever read this awesome book called How to Get Rich?
I love that book. Yeah.
I love that book. I recommend that book to everyone. It's horribly titled, but it's the best book I've ever
read.
You
should have equity
in that.
You should have equity in that book, Sam.
Dude, I whenever we mention in the pod, we'll notice the next day it goes up the charts like a ton. And he's dead now, but he built like a publishing empire that was like, it made him a lot of money. But the bulk of his wealth was he owned 10 or 20% of this thing called Micro Warehouse, which went public for multi-billions. And he made many, many hundreds of millions from it. And he had the same thing where he was like, look, I own the magazines that I'm going to promote you guys in there for free. And I'm also going to be like an advisor, but I'm going to be considered a co-founder. And this was my idea. And I hired you guys. But he didn't manage the company. He met with the other founders a lot, and he gave it his opinion, but he wasn't like running the day-to-day thing. I don't see why you couldn't do that with a few more things.
I think the power of blowing up a brand is one thing. The power of spotting and reading and hiring and delegating to really good operators is another thing as well that's underrated, and something that I think that I'm good at, finding people who really think about business the right way. And to build these companies, I can't operate them. I'm an investor, I'm an advisor, and I pump their stuff on Twitter, and I'm a customer, and I, you know, help, but you got to find somebody who really is really good at running a company. And that's where I wish I made a joke on Twitter that offended a couple of my good friends a couple of days ago that said, like, I need to do more angel investing so that I can invest in these companies. I can see how these founders think about business and how they make decisions and how they write their updates and how they fight through, and I can get a look into their brain, and I can spot the killers, right? I can find those guys that are just really good at business, and then I can pull them aside when they give up. And I made a statement like the hell, you know, when they want to leave the hellscape that is venture capital. And that's not true. It was just not cool for me to say that about my buddies who had so much value to the world in that space. But anyway,
and you're joking.
I was half joking, half being serious, because I want to pull these people away and basically found and start and buy businesses that I think that they could come in and run great businesses that are ran like crap and just accelerate their growth and make them better.
Dude, Austin Reef is an amazing operator. And I remember when I first met him, I was probably 28 or 29 or 30, and he's younger than me. He's 4 years younger than me. And I was like, you're the first person, you're one of the very few people who's like my peer, but younger than me, who I'm a little intimidated by. I'm like, I remember telling him, I was like, dude, I'm a lot better than you at a few things. You are so much better than me at a few other things. And I wish I would have met you earlier.
Listening to the way that he thinks about business problems and the way that he talks through them and the way that he paints a story in a clear and concise way when you're asking him about his business, is that's what I'm talking about. Like, that's the 10Xer. Austin is the 10Xer. He's 100Xer.
Totally.
He's on another level. But like, when you're around a lot of these people and you talk to them, you start asking questions and hearing the way they think about business, you can do it too. Like, you can just tell. You can tell when somebody's different, when somebody's really got it. You know what I mean?
Dude, he's the best. But I would also say, like, Andrew Wilkinson's a great friend of mine. I don't know what his empire is worth, but in the 500 to a billion range, depending on public markets, when I talk to him, I don't feel like, I'm like, Andrew, I don't feel you're out of my league. You've just been doing it for longer, and you are really creative, and you were the first person. You were bolder and smarter than me to like believe that this could actually become a thing, and you did the thing. And then you did it for years and years, and you didn't give up, and you never bowed down. You always did it your way. But in terms of like your vision and my vision, you know, my vision now that I see you could do it, I'm like, I don't think you're
I think we're in the same ballpark of like intellect. And so that's why when I see him, I'm like, dude, you're inspiring to me, because I kind of feel like we're almost the same, although the results are not the same. And I find that to be very inspirational. And that's kind of the same for you. Maybe like you look at a guy like him and be like, oh man,
this Andrew, is Andrew is my idol. Yeah. I mean, that man understands leverage and delegation unlike anybody that I've ever met, right? He can find somebody, his brain is so good at analyzing the pros and the cons of making a bet. He does business like a poker player, right? When the odds are in his favor, he's going to go big. And he's just proven that he can make those bets better than anybody else. He can find those excellent operators. And I think he's an undercover killer too. I mean, I know that he comes off really humble, but the dude is...
I think he's a killer too. He's a killer. Yeah. And anyone who's that successful is not a killer.
Yeah, you're right.
He does a good job because he like is a... I always tease him. I'm like, dude, you're always dressed so nice when you have slick back hair. Like you like have this like designer like look to you, but like you're like quit acting like you're like not a killer, because you definitely are.
He's got it.
What do you do with your money? What do you invest in?
Well, real estate, I'm not that liquid, right? I haven't sold a company. I haven't sold any properties. So I personally guarantee, you know, $50 million plus of debt, and I only have $3.6 million liquid. So I'd be foolish to start spending that on houses, cars, and boats, right? So I keep a lot of cash, about $1 million in cash. I keep another $2.5 million in public equities that I can create cash.
Are you trading? Are you trading?
No, I buy stocks and hold them for a long time. I'm way too dumb to try to guess what's going to happen inside of a market.
But you didn't used to be that way.
I bought some dumb... We talk about our friend Austin Reef. I bought some dumb stocks that I then sold 6 months later for a big loss. Absolutely. But I'm not trying to day trade in time markets.
Austin told us all that Zillow was like the buy. He was like... And I didn't buy it, but it was a fair argument.
Oh, we bought it at $150. It went up to $200, and I was getting texts from Austin that you know, let's go. Like, this is incredible. Now it's $30 or something. But no, I mean, Google and Facebook and Microsoft and Apple, all the best companies in the world, all got 50% cheaper. So I bought a lot of those, and I'm going to hold them for 5 years, and I'm sure that I'll do fine.
What's motivating you right now?
I just think it's fun. I mean, the building is really fun. Is that what you... I mean, I want to talk about you now too, Sam, because your earnout's over here. How many years post-exit? Are you 4 years out?
No, dude, two.
Two years. Okay, never mind. Yeah, I mean, you build something, you sell something, you have that event, and then when it's over, you're like, well, shit, I love building. I love tinkering. I love entrepreneurship and business.
I gave myself 1 year to... I basically wrote the rules where I was like, I'm going to read anything that interests me, whether that's... So I read a lot of fiction, and I don't read business books anymore. And then I also said, I'm just going to search. So I'm just going to plot and search and just whatever interests me, I'm just going to pursue it. You know, I was like, I'm just going to... a dog on a walk following my nose, and I'm not going to like feel guilty about that. And I noticed that after about 6 months, I was ready to roll again. I made some irreversible decisions at my company, like some culture decisions. Basically, when I started the company, I was 25. And then when I about sold it, I was about 30. And like, I was a different person. And I'm more solid on who I am now. So I would have different values when I start my next things. But anyway, I made some mistakes. So I basically kind of had to sell the company or in order to like get out. And so I was pumped about it. But at the same time, I was like, I wasn't wealthy when I started the business. I had nothing. I was like, I wish I was wealthy so I didn't have to sell this to get liquidity, because I would have liked to have owned it forever. But I was very, very, very happy to get that time to relax and to seek. And then after about 6 months, I was like, dude, I need action. I need to gamble. I remember watching a James Bond movie, and I'm like, should I become a cop? Like, I need to go out and like get into trouble. Like, I need to experience
it's a thrill. The uncertainty, I think. It's like, it's making a decision where you don't know what the answer is going to be, and then waiting and seeing what happens. That is just incredibly addicting about entrepreneurship and business.
Dude, I just like being a shithead with my friends. I love our group chat. Like, when it gets spicy, I like think about it all the time. Like, it's so funny. And I'm like, I got to go do something now to one up the guys here. And that's how I feel. So like the time I love the best when it comes to work is when I'm with like my partner Joe or someone like that. And we're like, we can't pull this off, can we? Oh, fuck, let's go try it. Like that adrenaline, that's like my version of like James Bond. When I'm watching him like having like a car chase, I'm like, dude, this is our nerdy version of a car chase. I need that thrill. And it just so happens that the outcome typically is money. And so that's what I'm motivated by, is like the thrill. I don't give a shit about legacy. When people talk about legacy, I'm like, I don't give a shit, dude. I'm like, imagine the feeling that you had before you were born. That's what I think I'm going to have when I'm dead. Why do I care what people think about me? You know, I want to like leave something to my children because I love them. But like, I don't give a fuck about what anyone else thinks. I don't care about legacy. I just want to have fun and like have excitement in the moment. And that's what I'm motivated by.
Yeah. Making these business deals and these business decisions and these calculated bets, we'll call them, like been with you and all these things I'm working on, they're just calculated bets. And when you put the money in, you just never know what's going to happen. You never know what's going to happen when you try to sell it, when you start to get customers, when you start to solve problems. And it's addicting for sure.
By the way, well, we can keep this on, but producer Ben, we have to bleep out the name of what he just said. I haven't announced that yet.
But can we talk about it? Can we?
Yeah. We can't say what it is, but we can mention I have a thing that I'm going to be announcing in a month. Nick just said the name of it. We got to bleep that out. I'll be announcing it in 1 month. I've been doing it low key for two reasons. One, I wanted to prove that I can do it without my audience. And two, I wanted to make sure that it worked and was life-changing. It's a wonderful product before I like get like an influx, but I'm going to announce that in a month. What else do we want to talk about? Anything else? I mean,
I've been thinking a little bit about like what holds people back and anxiety and the decision-making that like the
you
hardest
have anxiety?
No, I just mean like the uncertainty, like the fear of failure. Like it's in everybody. Not that, I guess anxiety is a bad term, more like insecurity, right? I have insecurity and it holds me back from making big decisions. And the problem with it is the more insecure you are, the less decisions you make. And decision-making is like something that you have to practice to get really good at. If you don't make big decisions with a lot on the line, you're never going to get better at it, ever going to get better at it. So then you have unmade decisions and that equals stress, because stress is a decision that hasn't yet been made. And then it just cycles and snowballs. So people who are, they have insecurity, they have anxiety around making decisions, then they get stressed out because they have these decisions. And it's just a big compounding snowball of like, it just holds people back from kicking so much ass. Like every high performer that I know, they make a ton of decisions. They make some of them wrong. They lose some money. Like there's downside, of course, but they just make them and make them and make them, and they make them quick, and they get better at it and better at it and better at it. And that's when the leverage kicks in and they can just build and grow and build and grow.
My parents, when I was a younger kid, I would like sell CDs or like sell used stuff on eBay. And I remember making mistakes and they're like, oh, that's all right. You can't get a hit unless you're in the game. And they're like, you're swinging your miss, but you know, you got to swing to get the hit, and you can't get a hit unless you're in the game. I remember hearing that, and that like changed my life. And so now whenever I screw up, I'm like, whatever. Like, you know, a 300 batting average in baseball is great. So I'm like, that's all I need. Like that in business is fine. In fact, in business, you actually need less. If you try 100 times and one thing works, it makes up for all the 99 things. But that's what I always tell people. I'm like, dude, you can't get a hit unless you're in the game.
I've been asking high performers this because now I have a 5-year-old. I'm thinking about what I can do for my kids to help them just get better at making decisions and get, you know, a more solid foundation in the event of insecurity. Did your parents just like let you struggle a little bit? Like that's something that I've found is very common among entrepreneurs and successful people, because so many parents nowadays, they really mess up because they like shelter their kids from all decision making. They like make the decisions for the kids. They keep them from getting in any pain at all. They're going to keep them from having to deal with the uncomfort of pain. They're going to put them in a bubble. And I look back on my parents, and my parents would like, they would make me make the little decisions when I was a kid so that I got better at making the decisions. And then when they were bigger, I wasn't overwhelmed with fear and insecurity.
I was always skateboarding and rollerblading and going to skate parks. And I remember I had a unicycle. I would try to ride it downstairs, and they were like, I was crazy. I was like, do all this crazy stuff. I remember when I was in fourth grade, I could ride a unicycle and juggle, and I would do all this crazy like skateboarding shit. And they would be like, hey, let's go to the skate park. But the only rules they had was you have to wear a helmet. They go, as long as you wear a helmet, we don't care. And so I was in and out of the hospital, broken fingers, stitches on my eye, broke my arm, broke my collarbone. I've had a lot of broken bones. And I always say my parents, once I left school, I wasn't financially they've never like helped me with a business or anything, but they supported me up until then. And so I had that, but they were emotionally supportive. So I remember when I left school and moved out to San Francisco and told them I was going to join this thing called Airbnb, they were like, this sounds like a multi-level marketing thing. Like, is this like, you're going to, and I was like, no guys, like, it's like, I think it's legit. Like at the time I was like 200 or 300 people work there. It's legit. And they're like, you're going to leave school to go do this? And I was like, yeah, it's legit. And they were like, well, this sounds horrible, but you know, we'll see you Saturday. We'll come down there and help you move out. And so like they did things like that, that were like very emotionally supportive. And so, and that was like huge. And so a lot of my friends who don't take risks, oftentimes their parents were quite neurotic, and they, instead of saying, instead of saying like, of course this can work, they would default to saying like, well, this will never work because of this, this, and this, or like, you can't go study abroad. Like Mexico is dangerous. Haven't you seen that there's like shootings or, you know, like people get sick when they, do this and that. Like, I remember like that was usually the default versus like, screw it. We'll handle it when we get there.
Yeah. Putting your kids in a bubble. And now that I have a 5-year old, like it sucks to watch him struggle. And I have a bunch of employees and it sucks to watch. I don't know. There's a lot of similarities between like raising
your kid get hurt though. Like, let's say your kid's riding a bike and he's wearing a helmet and you're like, dude, he's 100% about to knock his teeth out.
If he's about to hurt himself bad and I'm going to go to the emergency room, obviously I'm going to run and try to catch him. But if he's over on the other side of the cul-de-sac and he hits a curb and he falls down and he starts screaming, I'm not going to sprint over there and pick him up and coddle him. Does that make sense? Like, I'm going to let him figure that crap out. But I just think it bleeds over into everything. Like if an employee walks into your office and they have a problem and you just say, get out of my way, I'm going to solve that problem, then that enables them to, A, it doesn't let them learn how to solve problems on their own, and B, it enables them to bring you more and more problems and just be completely unable to like get shit done without you as a boss.
Ben just texted me and he wanted me to ask you, you have all three boys, right?
I have a 5-year-old boy, 3-year-old boy, 10-month-old girl.
Are you going to raise her the same way? I would imagine yes, right?
Oh, man. I don't know. I don't know if I will. Dude, yeah, you got it.
If I have a daughter, I mean, this is my, I'm hypothetical. You're living it. But I think I would definitely, you got to do it the same way, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm going to raise strong, secure daughter for sure. Like, A, I'm going to show her that I'm going to treat her mother with a ton of respect and that her mother should never take shit from me just because I'm a man, right? That's something like you cripple women in the long run if you like enable or like lead them to be insecure. So I'm going to try to raise like a really strong, confident, secure girl who can, yeah, knows how to struggle with grace. Absolutely. So when she falls down on her bike, I'm not going to run over there either, I guess.
Well, good, dude. I'm happy you came on. I like talking to you. By the way, we do this thing on our YouTube channel. I'm going to do it now. I was supposed to do it earlier on. We talk about the gentleman's agreement. Have you heard me say this?
I have not. Damn, you're catching me. I'm totally blind.
So we've been growing our YouTube subscribers at, I think last month we grew by 20,000. And the pitch was this, which I stole it from this guy named Jesse on Fire. So I'm not going to act like I came up with it. But it was, we guilted people a little bit. We said, hey, hold on. I normally say this in the beginning. I forgot to do it today. I go, hold on. Unlike everything else on YouTube, our content is not for free. We actually work for you. And the way that you pay us back, it's kind of like when you go up and buy you go up to 7-Eleven and you see like a jar for the muscle dystrophy and you take a piece of candy and you leave a quarter, or you leave a dollar. That's what this YouTube channel is. Except instead of the dollar, all you got to do is click like and subscribe on our little channel and we work for you. And so our content's not free. You have to subscribe if you watch more than one video. And it's called the gentleman's agreement because we're not there. It's a handshake. So anyway, that is the gentleman's agreement. So you do have to subscribe to our channel. But dude, that pitch changed everything. Immediately, we started seeing close to 1,000 people a day clicking subscribe. So it's working. So you got to have like a unique way of asking for it, and it's worked. And so now we have all types of people coming up to us. I was on a walk yesterday, and a guy drove by and goes, "Hey, I honored the gentleman's agreement." I swear to God, in Austin, I had two people last week say that to me. So anyway, that's our gentleman's agreement. So if you're listening, if you've ever listened to more than one episode, this is the gentleman's agreement. It's an honor system. You have to do it. And we can't check this on you, but please do it. Everyone's doing it, apparently, if we're growing almost 1,000 a day. But Nick, I appreciate you. What's the Support Shepherds, the Shepherd thing.
Yeah, supportshepherd.com, sweatystartup.com, boltstorage.com, supportshepherd.com, recosteg.com, taxcredithunter.com, webrun.com, titanrisk.com.
and sweaty startup on Twitter.
Right? No, I mean, I really appreciate this. I mean, you bring me on here. I hope your audience got something from this, because the value that this will add to me is phenomenal, man. You've always been incredibly supportive. I remember I was trying to launch a little community around real estate, and you got on a call when you were busy as hell and I wasn't that big of a deal, and you helped me set that whole thing up. I mean, the generosity, Sam, is freaking awesome.
Well, I appreciate that. And now, maybe one day I'm going to ask to be an affiliate of your affiliate or something like that.
Anything you need, man, let me know.
All right. I appreciate you. Thank you very much. That's the pod.
All right, so when my employees join Hampton, we have them do a whole bunch of onboarding stuff. But the most important thing that they do is they go through this thing I made called Copy That. Copy That is a thing that I made that teaches people how to write better. And the reason this is important is because at work, or even just in life, we communicate mostly via text right now, whether we're emailing, Slacking, blogging, texting, whatever. Most of the ways that we're communicating is by the written word. And so I made this thing called Copy That. That's guaranteed to make you write better. You can check it out, copythat.com. I post every single person who leaves a review, whether it's good or bad, I post it on the website. And you're going to see a trend, which is that this is a very, very, very simple exercise. Something that's so simple that they laugh at. They think, how is this going to actually impact us and make us write better? But I promise you, it does. You got to try it at copythat.com. I guarantee it's going to change the way you write. Again, copythat.com.